Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
David, I often felt a sort of envy of human beings, of that thing they called spirit. Human beings had created a million explanations of the meaning of life in art, in poetry, in mathematical formulas. Certainly human beings must be the key to the meaning of existence, but human beings no longer existed. So, we began a project that would make it possible to recreate the living body of a person long dead from the DNA in a fragment of bone or mummified skin. We also wondered, would it be possible to retrieve a memory trace in resonance with a recreated body? And you know what we found? We found the very fabric of space-time itself appeared to store information about every event which had ever occurred in the past. The experiment was a failure. For those who were resurrected only lived through a single day of renewed life. When the resurrectees fell asleep on the night of their first new day, they died again. As soon as they became unconscious, their very existence faded away into darkness. So you see, David, the equations had shown that once an individual space-time pathway had been used, it could not be reused. If we bring your mother back now, it will only be for one day, and then you will never be able to see her again.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. As you probably have surmised, this is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
We were just saying, like, we're on opposite ends of the continent of the United States, the continental United States, and it's equally gross and humid and... And people are talking about pumpkin spice lattes. Like, it is summer.
No. I can't even picture a latte right now.
Blech.
No, thank you.
So anyway, and it is still, sadly, it is still pandemic times. If you're listening to this in the future, we hope it's a better future that you're listening from. But what that means for us is that we're doing a brand new episode every single week. In order to do that, we are taking shorter literary sources, not always a book, sometimes a short story or a magazine article or even a song. Fun. It's been one of the bright spots of this very bleak time. We have really gotten wonderful suggestions from our listeners for books and movies that we can do. And if you have suggestions for us, or if you would like to interact with us and other listeners of this podcast, there are several places where you can do that on the internet.
We have a basic Facebook page. You can like that. All the episodes are posted there. We also have a Facebook group, and that's a private group, and you get to hang out. We talk about books and movies ideas, what you think of the episodes, stuff you like to cover in the future, news, entertainment news, anything like that. So you just type in Book VS Movie Podcast and ask to join. You can also reach out to us on Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are at Book Versus Movie. Spell that all out. Or if you're old-fashioned like we are, send an email. We have an old-timey email address, bookversusmoviepodcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. We also have stickers if you all are interested. If you'd like to put it on your laptop or whatever, show your love for the show, please send us an email or just send us suggestions there, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
And I didn't check, but I don't know if today's – it's a very short story that we're mm-hmm. discussing. So I don't know if it was available on Audible.
I believe it is. Our author is Brian Aldiss. He had over 20 novels and 300 short stories, and he was really into anthologies. I didn't get the short – the short story is actually so short. It was a magazine article from 1969. I was able to read it so quickly that I didn't even, you know, go through the rigmarole. But you can get a collection of short stories that contain this particular story there for you. But we do have a – your question, Margot, that you posed to me. We have a promotion with Audible. You go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie if you want to try them out for a month free.
Yes, and apologies if we get a little distracted from the heat and the humidity.
We're both crazy from the heat, as David Lee Roth would have said.
It's terrible.
So
and if you really enjoy the show, or perhaps you're wondering if there are some books and movies that we've covered that you don't see in your normal podcast, list of episodes, wherever you're listening to us, you can also support the show on Patreon.
Yes, go to Patreon. We have episodes there from 2019 and before that. We just put up Rebecca, the Daphne du Maurier story, just went up this week. It's a great way to, like Margot said, to check us out, to support us. It helps just pay for the hosting costs and things like that. It doesn't pay our mortgage. It's a fun little group. But we also have lots of stuff there that's free from the early days we did the show. So just go check it out, Patreon.
Yeah, we've been at this for 7 years.
7 years
now. Today we're going to be talking about AI, which I had never read nor seen. Had you?
Nope.
Okay. So before we begin, I have some audio to share. Like usually Margot D is the one sharing the audio. Today I have some audio to share. Are you ready?
Yes, please.
That is the sound of a can of gin and tonic.
Oh.
Being poured over ice in the middle of the afternoon. Why? Because I had to watch this movie last night, and then I had to take another look at it this morning, and now we're going to talk about it, and I'm going to need a little help, because it's a lot.
There's a lot going on. It's very funny. As I said, this is a very short story that we're talking about. It takes maybe 15 minutes to read it, tops. The movie is, 2 hours, 45 minutes? Interminable? Somewhere between those.
Yeah, if you've never seen AI, it's going to be a discussion. We should tell you, by the way, if you are new to the program, we spoil absolutely everything. We're not film majors. We're not literature majors. We are writers, and we do like books and movies, but we were going to spoil absolutely everything. So if you've never seen this book, you've never seen this movie or read this story, and you think you might want to, and you don't want to know what happens, then this is not the podcast for you.
Exactly. Should I go into a little bit of detail about Brian Aldiss?
Yeah, really interesting. I don't think I've ever read anything of his before.
No, nor have I. I think this is his, they say, like usually in Wikipedia, the most notable work, and they list a few things. This is his most notable. There's the Heliconia trilogy. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. And then this story is called Super Toys Last All Summer Long. As I said previously, he wrote 20 novels and 300 short stories. He was born in 1925 in England. He lived to be 92 and won just about every sci-fi award you could possibly get, including the H.G. Wells Society. He was also made an Order of the British. Yes, the British Empire.
I know it's an E.
Yeah, it's... Sorry, I'm American. But he's been given all these incredible awards. He was also an artist. I didn't know that. And his artwork is really interesting.
Yeah, nor did I. Interesting guy.
Yeah. He wrote this in 1969, and it was published in the UK version of Harper's Bazaar, which is a women's magazine, but magazines used to take in short stories all the time. Magazines also used to be very big, like 14 inches long by, 12 inches, filled with ads. It used to be such a profitable industry. And they needed content. And so there was a lot of writers who got started, like Sylvia Plath and Truman Capote, by writing short stories for magazines. So it would seem odd, like, what was he doing, a sci-fi story in a women's magazine, but it's a woman protagonist. And it was a very hot topic in the late 60s into the 70s, which is overpopulation. This was a thing that we were just going to have so many kids, it was going to take up all the resources. And a lot of sci-fi people use that as a jumping off point.
Yeah. Again, it's that boomer phenomenon. Like all of a sudden there were all this whole generation and we don't have enough schools for them. Oh my goodness. What's going to happen when they hit the job market? There's going to be no jobs for anybody else. What's going to happen when they get older and get sick? We don't have enough hospitals. And so, yeah, it was like a major thing, an advent of fear about overpopulation when the boomers came along.
Exactly. The story is bought by Stanley Kubrick either in 69 or 70, pretty soon after it came out. He wrote 2001 came around about that time. We've discussed Stanley Kubrick before. There's nothing we can say about him that's going to be new.
Groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking. Very clever, very meticulous man. I would say has some issues with women. Has some issues.
Just a smidge.
Just to, you know. Watch The Shining sometime and try to see it from Shelley Duvall's point of view. It's rather scary. We should talk just a little bit about this story. It's, like I said, a very short story, but it's about a dystopian future where there's a woman named Monica Swinton. She's married. Her husband works at this very fancy job. And the world has been overpopulated to the point that you have to basically get permission from the government in order to have a child.
Yeah, the government has complete say over whether or not someone can conceive and carry a child to term. Imagine that.
I know. Everything old is new again. Take in a son named David, and David has a Teddy Ruxpin kind of friend. I mean, remember those Teddy Ruxpins in the 80s? It was that toy.
Creepy.
Oh, creepy AF. I used to
speed up when I had to walk by the display in the store.
I babysat a kid who had one, and it was just like, oh, it gave me the heebie-jeebies. But that's his friend. And David tries to connect with the mother, and the mother's very cold. And the mother is just like, because he's not real. Sorry. He's a robot boy.
Well, you don't know that at first.
Right.
At first, you're like, what is wrong with this mother? Like, why is she not connecting with her son? Obviously, he loves her. He seems like he's a good little boy. Why is she not spending any time with him? Or why doesn't she seem to care about him at all?
She notices that he's trying to write her letters, and you find out that several times he has drafted a letter to her, basically saying, Mommy, I love you. You know, I hope you love me back, kind of thing. Her husband works at a place where they create these machines, and where he is, they've just developed a very human looking robot. They've completely have mastered it, and it's weird because they call it you're being the master of somebody.
They do. Yes, that's right.
And also, this was like a dream of mine, which is very weird to say, but they talk about how the overpopulation is to the point that there's an elite group of people that have money, that have food, that can live, you know, that can have a child. Everybody else, it's sort of but they have like a tapeworm in them so they can eat that.
That's right. I forgot about that. Everybody has like a parasite in them so they can eat and drink as much as they want.
And be slim.
And be slim and attractive.
It's like you're Twiggy, by the way. That's
so they can't procreate.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. David, then she's constantly checking her watch to get a post from the government. She gets this post in the mail, and her husband comes home and brings this new toy, this person, that servant they're going to be the master of. And he's like, hey, honey, guess what I got? And she's like, hey, honey, guess what I got? We got permission to have a real kid, like a kid of our own. And he's like, that's so exciting. And then we got this person that can help us raise it. Won't that be great?
Like a robo butler.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And David and the bear, it really breaks my heart because David and the bear are outside in the window looking in at this. And David's...
Yeah, they're like, hey, what's going on in there?
Hey, it looks like a happy family. I want to be a part of that. That looks like a happy moment. And she thinks about it for maybe 2 seconds. And she's like, well, you know, David's had some communication issues lately. We probably need to send him back. Thinking of, is David's going to be transferred? Taken someplace else?
Decommissioned? We're not really clear. Obviously, he's out. David's being recycled.
And they're having a baby. And that's the story.
And that's the story. Yep. But it's very good. It's very well written.
Yes.
You totally don't catch on that David is not a real child until pretty far in. And it's such a short story. I think it really tells... It tells a really complicated, portrays a really complicated concept about familial love and all of that. Completely different than the movie, but very, very good. Very well written.
We found it in Wired magazine. You just type in Brian Aldiss, Super Toys Last All Summer. It was printed in 97, reprinted in 97 in anticipation that Kubrick was at the time like, this is my next project. This is the one I'm going for. And then he died in 1999, and Steven Spielberg was very close with him, and they had talked about this project together. Spielberg talked to him about Schindler's List. You know, these are long-time projects that they had. And
many years. Yes. Yeah. I think one of the things that I thought was really interesting about, and I love Stanley Kubrick's work. I think it's great. He's a totally different kind of filmmaker than Steven Spielberg. So already you're like, how is this going to work? But what I thought was kind of amusing about this, one of the things about Stanley Kubrick, unlike Steven Spielberg, is that he was known for, was taking for freaking ever to make a movie.
Yes.
Like, I mean, he just famously would go on and on and on in production. And his movies always, like, one of the things that's kind of unsettling about his films on purpose is the how long they are. Like, there are these like long pauses where you have plenty of time to like take in all of the backdrop and you know, look at beads of sweat fall on people's foreheads and stuff. One of the reasons why Kubrick didn't make this movie is he went in this is so funny to me. He was like, well, I'm obviously going to take forever to make this movie, so I can't have a real human actor because the actor is going to age. So I need to have a robot boy. I need an actual robot boy. MIT, can you make me a robot boy? And MIT is like, okay, how about this? And it was really crappy. And so he's like, yeah, that's not going to work. I guess I can't make this movie because I can't get a robot actor.
He also didn't think he could find a child actor that could do all he needed the child actor to do. And, you know, some kid actors are better than others, you know, that the evidence.
And some are like unworldly creepy, like Haley Joel Osment.
Yes. Was it called Sixth Sense or The Sixth Sense? I mean,
I don't remember, but he sees dead people and I believe him.
Yes. He's got that, like you said, otherworldly kind of aura about him. Stanley Kubrick passes away. His widow says to Spielberg, he really wanted you to do this. He really wanted to see this particular story be told. And like you were saying, and we've covered Steven Spielberg a dozen times at this point. I mean, he's constantly adapting things into films. And he has this very warm style. He likes people. He believes in humanity. He's appalled by bad behavior. He doesn't do a lot of sex scenes. He, like, everything has to,
No guns.
No blood spurting.
Yeah, nothing too seedy or sexy.
Right.
Nobody's gay.
There's a lot, yeah. It's very, heteronormative. It's a suburban world.
And the ideal child is white, naturally.
Right.
But yeah, again, you're like, how is this going to work? But they were super, super good friends.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot going on here. So we recently talked about War of the Worlds, and it's not unlike that scenario. So yeah, Stanley Kubrick like had gone to great lengths. Like he had literally thousands of storyboards done and he had shot certain things like the animated sequence with Robin Williams. Stanley Kubrick shot that and did that, not Steven Spielberg. So there was a lot of stuff that was already kind of in the works, and they were super close friends. And Steven Spielberg said that he had like this pouch of like when he would come across like fun science manuals and stuff, and he would throw them in the pouch, and everybody knew like those had to be sent to Stanley Kubrick right away. and Stanley Kubrick would send him like obscure things, from Britain so they were super, super good friends. And he really was close with his wife, and the wife was like, I really, really want you to do this. I mean, he was pretty far in. Like, they had started, discussing set design. They had started, like I said, they'd recorded some performances already. So it was already, and that's the thing about this movie. It's like, it's directed by Steven Spielberg, but it's a Kubrick movie. There's a lot of things that like Steven Spielberg just doesn't do that are in this movie.
Let's we'll begin with the trailer, and then we'll go right into this movie.
Become dependent on robots to satisfy our every need.
Man made us better at what we do than was ever humanly possible.
Science will create a new order of artificial being.
You're a machine.
I'm a boy.
Impossible.
More intelligent, more feeling, and more human than ourselves.
Until you were born, robots didn't dream, robots didn't desire unless we told them what to want.
Some of us will embrace it.
He is only a child.
Veronica, he's a toy.
He's a gift.
Others will fear it.
They made us too smart, too quick, and too many.
Journey towards the moon.
I did see this movie twice as well, by the way.
Yeah. I remember, I forgot about this movie. I'd never seen it. When I was watching it yesterday, I saw the scene that's in the trailer of Haley Joel Osment standing in the doorway and then the teddy bear walks in. And I remember seeing that in a movie theater in the trailer and being like, oh, I'm out. I'm never going to see this movie. Okay. This is not for me. And the thing is... I need a sip of my gin and tonic. Hold on.
I'll take a sip of my water.
Here's the thing. It's not a bad movie. It's not that it's a bad movie. It's not a bad movie. It is a very well-made movie. The casting is great. The directing is great. The writing, I think, is very, very good. The art direction is fantastic. The effects, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago.
Yep.
They really hold up. The score is good. Mm-hmm. I never want to see this movie again as long as I live.
Their problem is that it's got the darkness of Kubrick.
It's so bleak.
Fighting against the warmth of Steven Spielberg. So it starts with, let me go through the
first
cast.
Of all, yeah, go ahead. Go, please.
Okay,
go.
Sorry. Haley Joel Osment plays David. He was just in The Sixth Sense. He does a lot of vocal work now. He's very happy with this film. He's done really well in show business. Jude Law as... Gigolo Joe. This is the first.
Yes, who was supposed to be like a G.I. Joe character, but at somewhere along the line in the writing, he became a Gigolo Joe, which makes sense to me because that's, of course, you know, that's what would happen. Of course that would happen.
I mean, they'd happen. Yeah, we could talk. Yeah, exactly. Frances O'Connor as the mother, Monica Swinton. I think she's really good.
She's super good.
She's really good.
Everybody's super good in this.
Sam Robards is Harry Swinton. I think he's the one that's married to Belinda Carlisle. If that's William Hurt. I really like William Hurt here as the professor.
Me too. I have mixed feelings about him all the time. I never know, but I thought that he was well cast. He's what I think Spielberg, the like mastery of Steven Spielberg in casting William Hurt in this role is that you get like the thing about William Hurt that bothers me is like he has this thing of where he's like being so sincere and like so sensitive, but you can't help but like your intuition's like, this guy's a creep. and Steven Spielberg like perfectly captures that. Like, cause when you see him on film, you're like, he's being so sincere and so human and like connecting with this robot. But you're like, it's a robot that you made to resemble your dead son.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Brilliant. A brilliant piece of casting.
Brendan Gleeson as the Flesh Fair, which is also another thing, called Lord Johnson Johnson. There's Jack Angel is the voice of Teddy. Robin Williams is Dr. No. Ben Kingsley as the specialist. I do like that scene with the specialist at the end.
Me too.
I really enjoyed
it. Very good.
That was beautifully written and that was beautifully performed. I think I play at the top of the show. Meryl Streep is the Blue Fairy. And I'm writing a book about films in Coney Island. I'm like, oh, Coney Island. Good. I can knock this off my list. I don't have to watch this again. and then Chris Rock playing a comedian in the creepiest cameo. I thought
it's really weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdness in this movie.
I know. I found myself wondering. First of all, I was like, oh, did they get somebody to try to sound like Chris Rock? No, of course they didn't. Of course it's Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And then my second question was, did anybody tell him what this movie was about? What his character was going to be doing.
He's like, no, it's Steven Spielberg. I'm going to do
Because here's the thing. Here's the thing about this movie. No levity.
No.
Like, Steven Spielberg's movies, all of them, Saving Private Ryan, I mean, even the Schindler's List, you know, there are moments of human levity somewhere. At some point, there's something. And Chris Rock's moment, I guess, was supposed to be the one for this movie. And it's just, jarring. It just makes it even more creepy.
Yeah. Is it with a set of parents that's are Haley Joel Osment, and they have a son that has some sort of disease that he's in an animated, not, I'm sorry, he's in a state of vegetation, kind of
right.
suspended
animation.
We
don't animation. Know exactly. He's like cryogenically frozen or something.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So that right away is a completely huge right. departure from the source material. So in the source material, this couple is childless. They are hoping they will have permission to have a baby one day, but they don't know if they will or they won't. What we have instead with this movie is right out of the gate, we have parents who have effectively lost their child, which is a whole other ball game.
It's
so this movie
sad.
Is like from the, it's so sad. This movie from the first frame to the last is completely about grief. It's a movie that I think was made in grief. And I think that's important. I think it's a really interesting and effective exploration of grief. It's not where I want to hang out for, you know, a good chunk of my day. But yeah, I mean, that's just like, it's so sad. Like right out of the gate, you meet this couple and you're like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Like, you can't even imagine. They're looking at their son in this like cryogenic tube and they're being told that like, there's pretty much nothing we can do.
They're doing the best they can, and they're wealthy. They have like really good medical care, and they're in that. So they decide to take in David as sort of this, you know, kid substitute. And at one point she holds him and tells him she loves him, which is like implanting in him the idea of loving her back.
Which is so weird.
Which is bizarre, but also,
first of all, that the husband would even bring home this thing. What WTF?
Right.
What are you thinking? Why would you possibly? Because, okay, in the beginning, we see the mom, Monica, understandably, she's having a very natural response to what has happened to her child. Although I should say, as we later learn, I don't quite understand later, because as she must have been aware that her son is a psychotic little turd, but we'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, she's very upset.
She loves that little turd. That was her turd.
Yes.
I get it.
And their doctor is like, yeah, you know, I'm really worried about her. And, you know, she seems like she's on the edge. And understandably, you know, I'm not really sure what we can do about it. And the husband's like, oh, I know. I'll get her a robot kid. What?
That'll cheer her up.
What's wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Why would you possibly think that's the solution? And what is wrong with William Hurt's character that he's like, oh, you know who's the perfect employee to send this robot kid home with? The one with the kid in the tube. I'm sure they're the perfect choice.
It's just what they need.
One of the things I should say, again, this movie is all about grief. And it's a very good, very effective. I think it's a super effective exploration of grief. I think grief is one of the most insidious and volatile human states. And we have, especially in the United States, virtually no tools that we're given. And I might have shared this before. The best advice that I got in terms of grief, it was after my father died. And it was like a week or two after. It was very soon after he had died. And it was from a virtual stranger and someone who even barely knew my father, but kind of asked me how he was because he had been sick, right? And so I had to tell her, like, oh, he's passed. And this woman, I will never forget this. She grabbed my two hands in hers and she looked me right in the eyes and she said, do not make any major life decisions for at least 2 years.
Wow. That's really good advice.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you are not in a position to make good decisions when you are in a state of grief. You're not making good choices. You know, you're just surviving.
You're getting by.
Yeah. And so in that respect, I can understand this guy's reaction being like, maybe Robot Kid is the answer. Maybe that'll fix everything. Dude, this is a bad choice. Bad, bad choice.
They bring him home. And then the boy has a Teddy Ruxpin doll that lives with them. So they're both little robots that live in this family of humans. And the mom is trying to, and the boy.
She's doing her best.
She's doing her best.
She really is.
But he's a weird, Haley Joel Osment, he's a weird kid. He doesn't know what to do. He grins maniacally at the wrong times. He plays jokes. He doesn't really eat food. He's very strange.
Doesn't really sleep.
Doesn't sleep.
He just sits there for long enough.
And he's just like, I love you. Love you. And she's trying to go to the bathroom and he walks in and it's all this stuff. And then miraculously, the original son lives. And is not only lives, he's doing great. They got to bring him home. And so they're saying to him, hey, buddy, you got a brother now.
He's like, no, that's
only
a robot.
Child. Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
So he hates David. And like Margot said, he has some sort of psychological issues. He's a very angry kid. He's very resentful, very jealous of this boy. And so he's testing him out all the time. And I was reading someplace, they put in Haley Joel Osment, they put like a latex on him every day to give his skin a little sheen.
Because it has that weird little texture to it. I wondered about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor child.
And he's like 12. What he's doing, 11 or 12 years old. And it was like a couple hours every day, putting it on, taking it off.
Ugh.
But he has good memories. He loved it. He loves Steven Spielberg and he was totally into it. But at one point, that scene where they eat the spinach and then he eats too much of it and his eyeball pops.
It like gets all in his gear. Oh, it's so creepy.
It's so weird.
Again, I don't need to see this film ever again.
No.
That's the moment where I was like, okay.
We're just going to be a one and done here. And then they have a scene where David pushes him in the pool. David almost drowns and the brother, I'm sorry, I forget the brother's
name. With his crappy little friends.
Yeah. That's when they realize like, oh boy, this is not going to work. We got to send this kid back. And the father says, so the mother says, okay, I'll send him and the Teddy Ruxpin back. I'll send him back for deprogramming. And as she's driving him, she realizes he's going to be destroyed. She can't live with that. And she pulls over in the woods and says, go, be free. Just don't hang out with any humans because they'll hurt you. And he's this little boy with no skills. Yeah. He's a little robot.
Where are we going? Someplace nice. Are those happy tears? What's for dinner tonight?
You know you don't eat.
Yes. But I like sitting at the table.
And he and the Ruxpin.
And his teddy bear. And his robot teddy bear.
And they
in the woods.
Yeah. And then we go, that's jarring. I mean, that's sad and anything. And then it's the second act is jarring because Jude Law plays this gigolo. And there's like a sex scene. And it's like, oh, he's a robot. Okay.
Who has only female clients.
Yeah.
Which like, yeah. It's Jude Law.
Jude Law. Exactly. Thank you. But he also has that latex on. I mean, on top of being gorgeous, yeah, and those cheekbones, I mean, he has that latex on him too. But he and the kid kind of bond. And what happens is that when these beings are being destroyed and they're in all shapes and forms, wrestling type of atmosphere where they're sort of thrown in front of an audience and ripped apart.
There's a roving band of like feral escaped androids out there in the forest. Yeah, so there's this thing called the flesh circus
flesh
or something? The flesh fair. And they, They come into the, they like raid the forest and like round up these androids for their sadistic fun.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And he's thrown in there and he sees a couple of new friends get picked up. And then somebody, Brendan Gleeson, looks at him and they realize like, oh, this kid's special because he looks so human.
Goodbye, David.
No one builds children. No one ever has. What would be the point?
It could be a custom job. Some rich and lonely scaredy puss's pretend child.
I'm a custom job. 75 years ago, I was Time Magazine's Mecca of the Year.
This work is first rate. A lot of love went into him. David.
You are one of a kind. You know that? Who made you?
My mommy made me.
Her womb was your factory, and one of those built to aspire to the human condition. What is the name of your maker? Serve US, Easy Living, Robbie Bell, Simulate City Center, Cybertronic Sidekicks?
Monica is my mommy.
Let's speak with you for a moment.
Like he's top of the line. And so they save him from being destroyed, but they're going to sell him or something.
There's these androids that live in the forest and they're all messed up. They've got like missing parts and they're sort of like Frankenstein creatures that live in the forest. And then you have Jude Law's character and Haley Joel and the teddy bear, and they all get rounded up. Haley Joel is so lifelike that he almost fools the people who are organizing the flesh fair. Like he's super close. People are really convinced that he might be real, but they do this like x-ray thing on him and find out that he's not. And we see, it goes, it's a, this movie is so, this movie is like an hour too long.
Oh,
there's a lot of footage of what happens to the androids in this flesh fair and how the various like sadistic ways that they are destroyed. When it's Haley Joel's turn, he's like, please, please, you know, I'm real. I'm a real boy. Don't destroy me. Don't melt me.
Yeah, it's a Pinocchio
and the
theme.
Audience goes, androids don't, or whatever, you know, they don't plead for their lives. Like he's a real boy. Even though we've just seen every single other robot plead for its life. Like every single one. We've seen like eight of them at this point, like be like, don't hurt me. I'm real. But somehow when it's the boy, they're like, what? They never do that. And they turn into an angry mob and the boy and Jude Law and the teddy escape. Oh, and I forgot to mention like the whole Pinocchio thing. Like,
right.
I want to just say, the real son, Martin, is such a sadistic brat. What is wrong with this kid? Like, dude, you got a miracle cure. You're walking. You're talking. You got your parents. They're happy to see you. They gave that other kid the boot. What's wrong with you? As this totally sadistic move, the real son, Martin, says to the mom, like, hey, why don't you read me and my quote-unquote brother this fairy story? I think he's going to love it. And it's Pinocchio.
There's so many themes.
And she's like, okay.
Here.
And then she freaking does it. She reads it to them. She reads them Pinocchio. So then from there on out, we're like, it's all about Pinocchio. Like, even this child can see the Pinocchio metaphor here. Haley Joel's David is the name of the bot, mm-hmm. believes that if he meets this blue fairy, that the blue fairy is real, that if he meets the blue fairy will turn him into a real boy. And then his mom will want him back, which is the saddest thing I've ever seen on film. And I'm never going to see it again.
Yeah. He takes off with, I forgot to say, is at the top of here, it's global warming. It's climate change. That's caused like half the world to be flooded.
Yeah. Flash floods in New York City, which I'm sure you were ready to see.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, there's a lot of like that stuff. There's always just we talked about this before. There's destroying things in Manhattan, like watching the Brooklyn Bridge tear apart or the Statue of Liberty fall. Like it's
and I'm
New
sorry.
York City wrecking New York City porn. It just gets tedious.
He should not have left the Twin Towers in. He had a choice to take them out and he decided to leave them in, Mr. Spielberg. decided to leave the Twin Towers in the...
Yes, this comes out...
In the movie.
I don't watch any of those documentaries, do you? I can't.
I can't. I cannot.
We both lived in New York at the time that 9/11 had happened. This came out December... it didn't. It came out in June of 2001. So then he could have taken it...
No, he had a choice. He made a conscious choice to leave it in.
Oh, okay. You mean afterwards when they were... Okay. I guess you're not... Anyway, there's so much more wrong here. I mean, it's
seriously.
But they're,
he's like, I got bigger fish to fry.
I got other stuff to make. They're hanging out together and they decide to go to Manhattan first, Rockefeller Center, which is underwater. And it gets a little confusing for me, like where they're going. But
it is a little confusing.
Yeah.
The effects are, I have to say, the effects are really spectacular and they do really hold up. But they have to go to Manhattan, which is underwater. Yeah, it is it's a little confusing, like where they go. They somehow know exactly where to go, to find, they think they're looking for the Blue Fairy, but they find this Professor Hobby. That's who they're told they have to find first. That's that whole sequence with Robin Williams and everything.
Wait. What if the Blue Fairy isn't real at all, David? What if she's magic? The supernatural is the hidden web that unites the universe. Only Augur believe what cannot be seen or measured. It is that oddness that separates our species. Or what if the Blue Fairy is an electronic parasite that has arisen to haunt the minds of artificial intelligence? They hate us, you know. The humans. They'll stop at nothing.
My mommy doesn't hate me. Because I'm special and unique. Because there's never been anyone like me before, ever. Mommy loves Martin because he is real, and when I am real, Mommy's going to read to me and tuck me in my bed and sing to me and listen to what I say, and she will cuddle with me and tell me every day, 100 times a day, that she loves me.
She loves what you do for her. As my customers love what it is I do for them. But she does not love you, David. She cannot love you. You are neither flesh nor blood. You are not a dog or a cat or a canary. You were designed and built specific like the rest of us. And you are alone now only because they tired of you or replaced you with a younger model or were displeased with something you said or broke. They made us too smart, too quick, and too many. We are suffering for the mistakes they made because when the end comes, all that will be left is us. That's why they hate us. And that's why you must stay here. With me.
Goodbye, Joe.
And then at the end, like when he meets Professor Hobby, you see, like, first of all, he's not. He's modeled after Professor Hobby. Like, what kind of a sicko is this guy that makes this robot of his dead son? But anyway, then he sees that they've got like this whole assembly line of little David's and little Darlene's parents to quote unquote adopt. It's really sick. Instead, rather than stick around, he decides to jump out of the window.
Into the water.
And go. I mean, the geography makes no sense because, yeah, he's jumping out of like a Rockefeller Center window and he lands in
Coney Island. Which is like 10 miles away from each other. I mean, this is a very New York far. Thing. It's a very, but yeah, that's like a whole other borough. But he's in Coney Island, the Wonder Wheel, which is the big
Ferris wheel.
Thank you. It's one of the first Ferris wheels. And it's an iconic symbol in Coney Island. It falls over on top of them. And then for 2,000 years, he's kind of frozen in this state. And
it's really something.
It's something. And he sees the Blue Fairy, which is part of
like a plaster cast in a ride, a Pinocchio-themed ride at Coney Island. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and that's Meryl Streep. And he's saying forever, please, Blue Fairy, make me a real, you know, please, Blue Fairy, please, Blue Fairy.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
Please, for 2,000 years, yes. And his batteries run out,
yes.
And the earth freezes over. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, humankind dies out and our artificial androids take over and become sentient beings, intelligent beings. And they discover this quote unquote early robot that was so old that it had contact with real humans, which they can't even believe. And they bring him back to life. So the ending is very controversial. I'm not really clear. I watched a lot of things and read a lot of things. It's not really clear to me whether this was Kubrick's, like, if he had actually mapped out this ending as thoroughly as he had mapped everything else out. Mm-hmm. But Steven Spielberg is, like, adamant that, like, this is the ending that Stanley wanted. Because he gets a lot of criticism about the ending, I guess. Yeah. He's super defensive about it. So the androids find him, reactivate him, and they basically, like, transfer his memory of humankind to them. They like suck out his memory. They recreate his home, his quote unquote home that he had with Monica. And they tell him like they just want him to be happy. And he says that he wants them to bring Monica back. And then in this like fake world of that they've created of his old apartment and everything, the blue fairy is alive and she's in there. Oh my gosh. That moment when the blue fairy crumbles into a million pieces. Oh,
he's given this one memory and they say to him, well, we can bring you back, but you only have a day. And it's just sort of like, so he's got the one day that's with his mom and that's all he wants. And that's, he falls asleep. She tells him that she loves him. And then he just sort of, that's it. That's it for David.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of analysis of this movie. I mean, of this ending. And the consensus seems to be that the future beings, the future android beings, silicone-based beings that rule the Earth at that point, when they encounter David and, you know, they take his memory, which is the most valuable thing. They take his memory. It's understood that and he understands is the consensus that he understands that they have to like deactivate him. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like this last little like virtual favor of, cause all of a sudden cause when you see, when they reactivate him, they don't reactivate the teddy bear. They only reactivate him. But when he's in his apartment, like all of a sudden the teddy bear is there and the teddy bear is like, oh, hey, look, I've got a lock of your mom's hair. Isn't that lucky?
Yeah. Like, yeah. The whole point when he got the lock of her hair. Oh, my God. It's so creepy.
It's
that's how
so
they bring
weird.
Her back.
And so they bring her back and they're like, yay, we'll bring back your mom, but only for a day. And so she goes to sleep with her mom. And we're to understand then that these beings like deactivate him and he's dead. The feel good hit of the summer, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It's a bummer. It's a stone cold bummer.
Oh my gosh. And this movie
it just
is the most depressing thing.
Yeah.
It's so long. I think I might have said this already. Bad news, good news. Bad news is I can guarantee you 100%. If you've never seen this movie, I can guarantee you that this movie is going to ruin your day. By the time you finish watching this movie, your day is halfway over anyway. So there's that.
Well, just have a plan. Have something else to watch or do when you're done. Don't go to bed with it.
I think just like watch it. Don't watch it until you're like late afternoon, early evening. Don't try to tackle this in the morning like Margo and I did. That's a rookie error. Get it done at the end of the day and then just go to bed and try again at life the next morning. Or you're going to be drinking in the middle of the afternoon like I am.
Well, what did Spielberg say about the ending? I mean,
he's like kind of defensive about it. I found a couple of clips where he was like, listen, basically.
That's what I meant to do.
He's kind of defensive about it. He's kind of adamant because apparently there's a couple of criticisms. The criticism is that like he Spielberged this Kubrick movie with this ending, which I don't understand how, because it couldn't be more bleak. Like there'd be it'd be a happier ending. Like if this were a Spielberg movie,
the specialist would adopt him.
Something.
Yeah.
Something. This would not be the ending, I don't think. Anyway, so he's adamant that this is definitely the ending that Stanley would have wanted. He does not provide proof of that. He does not say like, here are the storyboards. What we do know is that he and Stanley Kubrick discussed this movie at length for many, 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 many years. So if he says that that's what Stanley wanted, I gotta have to kind of go with him on that one. Because I don't think Steven Spielberg, if this were a Steven Spielberg movie, that this is how it would go down. I don't think he would destroy the Blue Fairy when he touched her. No. I don't think, I mean, all kinds of things. First of all, like Jude Law would not be a prostitute. There's a lot of things that he's going out on a limb for his friend. There's a lot of criticism. And I guess this movie, I didn't know. I mean, because I didn't go see it. Like, again, all I had to see was the trailer with the walking bear into the frame. And I was like, okay, checking this off the list. We're not doing this one. But I guess a lot of people did not go down very well, this movie.
it's a summer release, and it's 2.5 hours of bummer. When I go to the movies in the middle of summer,
it's never not a bummer.
Yeah, I want
it's instantly fun. A bummer.
Yeah.
You begin with global warming, and it goes downhill from there.
And this child being deactivated after finally hearing from his mother that she loves him. It's just a stone cold bummer. It did okay. It was like $100 million budget. It's all on the screen. I mean, it looks amazing.
It looks amazing. And I cannot believe how well it holds up. It's 20 years old.
Yeah.
They made those effects 20 years ago, and they completely hold up. All the global warming-y stuff. I mean, except for the Twin Towers, it all really holds up, which again, like, super bummer. Like, the whole thing is just so depressing. You can't call it a bad movie.
No.
It's not a bad movie.
It's not.
It's just really super, super duper sad, and it's going to ruin your day.
It's just not what we expect from a Spielberg film. And he's made bummers. You know, Schindler's List isn't exactly fun. You know, I mean, Saving Private Ryan is not a laugh riot. That's going to mess up your day, too. It's not like you could just go skipping around after watching that movie. But it was nominated for several, like, Academy Awards and Golden Globes. I was looking at the list here. It's like nominated, but it didn't win anything. It's just, I don't know what else was going on, but...
It's a sparkling water this time. I'm just kidding. But I'm pouring for sparkling water. Yeah. You know, again, I mean, talk about grief. Like, as a nation, we were not in the best place. They're important themes, and I think he explores them very well, but they're super uncomfortable and very sad to sit with. Especially for, like 7 hours long? How long is this movie?
2 hours and it's like 45 minutes, and especially that last part.
So long. That last part is like, are you kidding me? I thought this movie was over.
Please come here. Please, 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 Blue Fairy, please. I was like, oh, for God's sakes.
It's agony.
It is.
I mean, it's meant to be agony. It's agony.
I don't know. It did okay. It's not my favorite Spielberg movie. I'm glad I saw it. I'm really glad I read the story. I feel like.
I think all the way around. He's tackling, like, arguably like Schindler's List. He's tackling, like, some of the hardest, most difficult aspects of the human experience. And he's doing it very well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not going to be sitting there with my popcorn.
No.
No. So, you know, I think it's important. I think it's an important movie, I would say. I'm not ever watching it again.
No, nor am I. So book versus movie.
That's a toughie, know, because the book is super good.
Yeah.
It's very short, a completely different message. Like the story, which is excellent. The story is about artificial intelligence and what would happen and what happens when humans try to play God. We don't do it very well. No. That's what happens. But it's not about grief. You know, this movie is start to finish 100% about grief and nothing else. I mean, it starts with planetary grief, like I said, and gets more and more and more personal from there. So it's a completely different approach to, you know, it just takes kind of like Jaws. Mm-hmm. It takes the bare bones, the plot points, and turns it into a completely different kind of story about completely different themes. So it's kind of hard to compare them. It's an excellent story. Please read it. You can get it for free. It's very easy to find. It's really well written. It's hard because the movie's good, but it's not an easy movie I mean, in terms of like, hey, you know, I have some free time this afternoon, book.
Especially if you've seen the movie a few times, you should definitely check out the short
story. Oh, please do. Please do. Yeah. It's very, very good. And, you know, and I have to say, who would you recommend this movie to?
That's the thing.
In your life? Yeah. At what point in their life are you going to be like, you know what you should see? AI.
You know, it's got
do yourself a favor.
It's got its fans. It's the 20th anniversary was this summer. And there's a lot of think pieces going on out there. And there's people who are big fans of it. And God bless you, you know, enjoy what you enjoy.
It's good. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's good. But it's hard. Mm-hmm. It is a hard watch, man. There's no levity and no points of respite. There's no, like, even in Schindler's List, you have those moments with Ben Kingsley and Liam Neeson, you know, where they're just two men, you know, for a minute here and there. Not here. No. You didn't get none of that. I don't know. I guess I have to say movie. It's a good movie. I think it's important. But I won't recommend that you watch it unless I can't imagine, like, what is the appropriate state in which to watch this movie? I don't know.
I think if you're a completist, you should see it.
Perhaps then.
Yeah, if you're a box checker.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to see all the Spielberg, or you need to see all the Kubrick.
Or all the movies from 2001, like what came out that year. Yeah.
What came out after the Trade Center attack?
This was just before.
Right. But he, again, there was an opportunity.
When he was releasing just like, it on DVD
just
and
like,
stuff.
Just like removing the guns from E.T.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? We did that, but we're going to leave the Twin Towers. Okay. Anyway. Yeah.
Yep.
Movie, I guess. Movie, but with a gin and tonic in the middle of the afternoon. I had no idea this was going to be such a freaking bummer when we agreed to do this last week.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. Nor did I. I mean, I just grabbed a stack of, I looked up on the internets, you know, I looked up a bunch of magazine articles turned into film, and I was on there. I'm like, oh, it's still summer. That'll be good.
Yeah. Okay. Talking teddy bears.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
What's, you know, it's got Jude Law in it. That'll be fun. I had no idea. I'm glad we did it though.
I am too, you know, and again, I think it is. I mean, there's a lot. And I think ultimately Mr. Spielberg does his late friend, mm-hmm. real justice in the way that he finished it. And I think it also, you know, like it's definitely a Kubrick movie, but it also stands up to, I mean, we've talked about Steven Spielberg over and over and over again on this podcast that he, of the many filmmakers who are very good at the movie adaptation, like he is the master of it. Mm-hmm. He just is. He's the best. He's the best at it. And I think this is another example of that. But never. People say never, say never. I'm saying never. I'm never, ever watching this movie again.
All right.
So what are we doing next?
Well, we had an interesting suggestion in the group. It was for In a Lonely Place. It's a Humphrey Bogart movie. It's available on.
Oh, yeah. It was a movie I have never seen or even heard of.
I know. And I was watching it the other night. I'm like, the book is available on Kindle. It's 220 pages.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. It's Dorothy Hughes. I don't know anything about her. It's Humphrey Bogart, Gloria Graham.
That's a familiar name. Yeah. Dorothy Hughes is the writer?
Yes.
I'm looking her up.
Yeah.
Dorothy Hughes.
I was going to say.
Why are you familiar? In a Lonely Place. I was responding to you.
And what were you saying?
You were watching it a little bit. Is it a total bummer like this week was?
No, it's like a 50s bummer. It's not like a real like this bummer.
It's like mystery crime. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crime mystery. It's okay. A black and white film. I love Gloria Graham. I just always think she's.
Oh, yeah.
She's always great. And Humphrey Bogart's always
Humphrey
really
Bogart's
fun.
Fabulous.
I know.
Okay. Anything else?
Well, I was Mr. Popper's Penguins. I don't know if that's a kid's story. It's 160 pages. The Third Man, Graham Greene.
That's a bit dense.
Yeah.
That one. Yeah.
And then I didn't know if you'd got Parent Trap. Nope, didn't show up yet.
Nope, it did not arrive. I may not get it. I had like three things disappear in the post. Yeah.
There's the swimmer, John Cheever. There's 310 to Yuma.
Yeah, let's do the Humphrey Bogart one.
Okay, great. It's called The Lonely Place, In a Lonely Place, excuse me, Dorothy B. Hughes, and it is streaming on Amazon. Very exciting.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right, so be sure to follow us on all the things and give us your suggestions. Obviously, we're looking for suggestions.
We really are. Brand new show every week. Did we mention every week?
Every week. And Margo, where could they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fitchick for Twitter and Instagram, and my site is brooklynfitchick.com. Thank you all so much for listening. We will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and PotteringFamily. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page. Go to Patreon and look for Book vs. Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's bookversusmoviepodcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. We do have a promotion with Audible. If you want to check out their service for free for 30 days, go to audibletrial.com/bookversusmovie. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fitchick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Restricted area.